accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, it is 6:01 p.m., and you are listening to Labor Radio. This is Go, and I am here with...
Ted Jones. Hi.
Sure. Today we'll be discussing, on this day, Labor Day, which is the first Monday of September, to celebrate the social and economic achievements that we make as the power of collective action as a working class that's essential for our working society. Today we'll be discussing the achievements and the consequence of having labor support our economic structures and what it does to our natural life.
Until this year, I don't remember a time when I didn't have to work on Labor Day. I always found that ironic.
Some work never ends. We were going to discuss earlier today, I was going to have an interviewer discuss the consequence of the Amazon fire. This is something that has upset a lot of people, but ultimately the resolution was that it's related to our working structures and our labor structures that support things that could happen, disastrous things that could happen in our natural environment. So we're going to get into agribusiness and local business and how we can be able to address those things. But first, let's come from our personal perspectives and draw from there. What was the first job you had?
I worked at Safeway in Phoenix, Arizona. Not a great job. I remember pushing carts off the blacktop asphalt parking lot in July, being told to do it again faster. I joined the union, but that had no, I was later fired.
When you joined the union, what did you learn about the process that helped you as an independent employee to speak up for your rights as unions helped do?
There was no apparent option to speak up. I was just, they took the deduction, it was a union contract. There was no union
meetings,
shop steward or anything like that.
Well, you worked in a grocer. Did you also witness food deliveries?
I did.
All right, what'd that look like?
Those guys were happier. I think they had a real representative.
What did it look like? Food coming in on a truck. Yeah, what it looked like the first time you saw it.
It looked like a lot of boxes of cauliflower coming out of a truck.
And did you ever sort and restock cauliflower and notice where it came from on the box?
No, I suspect it came from Mexico.
Mexico. NAFTA. Yeah.
And this is pre-NAFTA. Pre-NAFTA. By the way, for so what it's worth.
And any of your jobs, the benefit you received was being able to pay for things so that way you can live a...
Not always.
Not always.
I was a cab driver for a long time. That cost me quite a bit. But nothing motivates you more than knowing that you already owe somebody $100 every day. And maybe you'll get $100.
All right.
Or so $125.
Some businesses are based off investment. So you had a personal investment, which was supposed to kind of spur your own motivating engine to complete the job as
I bought a cab.
You bought a cab. And you drove around cities. Where was you doing cab?
Boulder, Colorado.
Was there anything interesting there when you were driving around patrons?
You know, not as much as you'd think.
No? Just getting people here to there?
A lot of stone college students, yuppies, drunken yuppies, mostly just that.
And when you use your money, what do you usually buy?
Mostly fast food, tobacco, I must admit, I'm a smoker, coffee, and cat food. I have two cats. It's not for me. It's for them.
And when you think about where your money ends up, do you also see ahead of that money? Like this cat food money that's worth millions, billions, is really to support a yacht club?
Until just now, I never even thought about where the cat food money is going. But now that is terrifying.
Yes, and this is a realization that our caller had that wanted that to kind of be exposed. Was it's not really an expose, but I guess when we're talking to one another, some of us are realizing that our money is being reinvested to other things that we may not necessarily agree to. And that's one of the conflicts that we're running into. But for labor, and you laborers out there, it is of great honor and a great privilege to be able to be a part of an organism that supports all of our livelihoods, no matter how you choose to have them or not choose to have them. But on the global scale, we were discussing the Amazon rainforest. What are your thoughts? Have you seen any clips of the Amazonian rainforest fires?
not really, honestly. Apparently there's 75,000 fires.
75,000 fires.
It's a big forest, so. And that could be from the beginning of the year. You should fact check me. That is all clearly opportunistic capitalism at work.
Well, here's the thing. Those are words. But what it could mean, instead of dismantling an idea of capitalism, is to kind of get to what actually is going on. Does the rainforest ever, does it pose any kind of significance to you in any way?
I'm in favor of it.
You like the rainforest? It
terrifies me.
Yeah.
I will someday, hopefully, I will go there and be terrified.
Some people have described the rainforest as the lungs of the earth. Now, these are our naturalists, and they're not naturalists. This is just about...
Naturalists.
Yeah, well, about
good
thinking of
20th
exactly...
20th century word.
21st century word. You know, things come before words. Right. Words help us to communicate. But I am showing currently our guests pictures of the Amazonian rainforest. Fire, specifically. Now, as a smoker, air and lungs.
Well, I won't smoke if I go to the Amazon.
We're
I
not really.
I won't smoke.
Well, here's the thing. We're not really discussing your personal choice to engage in that, but your like the cat food, your investment in your down payment on tobacco is getting reinvested to serve another purpose that you have no idea for. But in the long run, someone who cares about air, because you need air to be able to smoke, because you're using
Good
your
point.
Smoke. Yeah, so your lungs, right? Your lungs. How important are your lungs to you?
I need at least one.
At least one. Now,
I'm thinking the right one is two and a half. Anyway.
Okay. So when you think about, you realize that you have a life and that the planet has a life of its own too, aside from us. If we weren't on here, the planet would live. If we weren't on this planet, would we live? The fact that that's presented as a question is also a rhetorical situation. But if you want to address whether or not we'd live on other planets, which is actually becoming another topic on its own to actually be occurring, Mars or Moon.
Moon.
Okay.
I'm for the Moon.
How would work look on those in those places?
You'd have to be a lot more polite to each other, I tell you.
Well, how would it look? What would working on the Moon require? How would we have a labor-driven society on the Moon?
Oh, dude, it's all, yeah. It would have to be a union thing. You're not going to get anybody to go to the Moon if you don't have some guarantees.
Well, let's say it's already happening. We're already on the Moon. Pioneers have already set it up so that way you can work there. So something like mining for carbon or whatever else is on the Moon or on Mars, certain resources. This is kind of what we're saying labor is really based off of, is doing the work of gathering resources or distributing resources.
Well, that's much more depressing.
Yeah, because there's not much there. Earth, by chance and on purpose, is full of diverse everything. Biologically, atmospherically, it's a pretty special place. So when our labor is based on treating those resources that are already there, how do you then see yourself in that whole scheme? Working, as a working person. Do you feel?
I don't personally ever see the point of it, but I know that they'll give me $5.15 an hour if I just pack these boxes with whatever they're sending down the chute. Not a union job, by the way. The packaging plant should have been, needs to be, but no, temp agency. I've been a temp worker most of my life. There is no union for that.
Were there any jobs that you had that you actually really enjoyed?
I like being a cab driver.
But okay, you said it was uneventful. So what did you like about being a cab driver?
I got to drive a powerful car, do donuts down the main street in the middle of winter.
And the goal? How did you feel about the goal?
No. There's no goal. There's no
point.
You
pick someone up, you drop it off.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that goal? Transporting
people. That
was
the worst part of it.
The worst part of it was the actual job.
The passengers, yeah.
Oh, right. Dealing with actual passengers.
Yeah, I don't care for it.
Okay. This is perfect because when it comes to talking about things that affect us all, a lot of people are not unlike Ted Jones we have with us today. Not the actual Ted Jones, by the way. This is a moniker being used, so Ted Jones is okay. He's not here speaking. But the whole
real Ted Jones?
Huh?
Is there a real Ted Jones?
Oh, wow. Okay, so we're going to get into this mindset. How can we kind of help the millions, in at least in America, that work to be able to not just become aware of the consequence of our labor actions, but to also then become responsive and responsible to those things? So what would it take? What's one thing you feel responsible for outside of yourself? that you care for?
Well, with regard to unions, people are just, they're scared to talk about it, right? This was my thing even back in Safeway days, 30 years ago. I was like, well, I've joined a union. Now, what are we going to do about it? Can we, why is the boss hassling us? Can we, and I minimize, but nobody wanted to talk about it.
What was the actual issue at hand that nobody wanted to talk about?
Well, for me personally, I didn't want to be told to go every 15 minutes to pull the carts off the blacktop in the summertime.
It was summer. The carts needed to be pulled in. This was something that was a logistical thing. You were in the position to handle that. So that was something that was going to be asked of you. Okay. But were you, you know...
When I was not being, like, abused or exploited.
Right.
Anyway.
There are gaps and holes of our labor system that people can... That
there are people now who... Jobs that once upon a time were union represented and now are maybe, like, superficially so.
Well, I kind of want to go into the idea that you keep mentioning unions, and that's another way that the worker or the employee is distanced from the actual conflict or the conversation of what's occurring in the labor force on the ground when it comes to talking to somebody who's not there. So when that presents itself after decades in use of this system of using labor unions to kind of instill this worker representation, you seem to not be feeling very close to the solution and more a part of the aggravated portion of the problem. So, like, if you could change how...
That's right. I am an aggravated portion.
Okay. So, if you could change anything about the retrieving of carts on the lot, how would you imagine that to go? That would be suffice for you, like, satisfying for you in a very short way.
Honestly, if I could go back and talk to my 15-year-old self, I'd just say, suck it up and push the carts off the thing. But later on, working as a temporary employee, doing many things where like you don't even have an option to have any sort of organization, you know?
But I'm saying imagine what, even if you had the option, this seems to be the issue that's coming up, is that the reason why most higher-ups don't instill any kind of board or open table discussion with those who work on the ground is because it's assumed you have no other idea on how this would go, and it would just be like talking to a bunch of raging birds or raging whatever animals they want to put in there. But the whole idea is
that maybe you're not capable.
But I'm saying, okay, you're fully capable. So now that you're capable, get rid of that idea there is no other solution to that. In the small ways that we do something affects the large ways that we do something. So when you were doing any of those jobs with or without a union, how would you have modified the way you did it so that way the job would get done efficiently and that you could also have some job satisfaction? Pick one job that you had so that way you know it intimately enough.
I once had a job, temp job, stuffing envelopes for 6 weeks. It had a definite end date. And I had this table that I sat at. I looked out the window at a parking lot. And I had a Walkman. It's a portable music device for the 20th century. And I would listen to this, and I would stuff envelopes for 8 hours until the lady at the desk next to me said, 4:30, and it was time to leave. That was a very satisfying job.
Okay. So,
I felt totally autonomous, and nobody really knew why I was there. They knew that I was stuffing envelopes, but they didn't. Nobody knew my name. It didn't matter. I just took up this space, and then eventually, all the envelopes were stuffed.
Beautiful. So having that kind of distance from, okay, so we're getting to this this sentiment
that.
I'm not
really answering your question.
No. It's not an answer that to be given. You have your answer. The whole thing is that when it comes to you in the working force, you'd rather not be engaged amongst other human beings.
Yeah.
That itself presents job dissatisfaction. Where a lot of jobs now that are being presented as jobs in bigger corporations like Google and Amazon, there are now smaller jobs. There are jobs to be filled instead of positions to be filled where you have a larger effect.
You get
so
a little bit. Like, everything is now gigs, you know?
Well, not
like
for everyone.
I have 5 different jobs, right, that each pays a pittance, right? But if I do all that, then maybe somehow it's all okay. But there's no defense, you know, when if I lose my phone, then I've effectively lost my job, right?
So regardless of how disconnected you want to be, you're constantly running into the actuality and reality that you are connected.
There is some
There's a dependence on
having to show up someplace, you know,
to feel like you're necessary. You're a necessary part. If you weren't there to stuff the envelopes, it wouldn't get stuffed. Another person would have to be there to stuff the envelopes. But this is an age-old argument. So let's bring it to 2019. So 2019, what a lot of companies have been engaging in since they realized that it kind of works is to have company culture or corporate culture where they're fostering the idea of humanism and re-engaging people, reconnecting people, having little activities that get you to know your fellow worker. This is something that would not work for you,
or at least healing session.
So to the worker who's like opposed entirely, like I just want you out of my life type of stuff, how not attractive is it to work in the, what positions at any job or business would you feel a complete engagement with? Like that's something I can do all day and I would love to do that all day. It could be anything. It could even be like not an official thing. Now that marijuana is legal, there are jobs like that, if it's something that you have an affinity for, then people can kind of engage because they love the product itself. But as far as it being any other thing, like if it was bananas, just delivering bananas because you love bananas, is it something that you have to love? Like you have to like the thing that you're serving, or is there any activity that you find you enjoy and then try and modify that into a job?
No.
Okay.
I was an English major, and as I said, I've been a cab driver and a temporary employee. So no, I have not. I have no trajectory, if you will. No. no obvious ambition or purpose. My God, I'm depressed now.
No. You're fine. Because you're not alone in this, and it kind of leads us to these situations.
Back again to unions, though, and collective.
Well, it makes no sense. It makes no sense if it's just a system. If nobody involved wants to actually be involved, that they rather just let someone else take the wheel.
But
that's the whole thing. Well, that's the thing.
I'm not going to rock the boat, you know.
Yeah, but you're not rocking the boat either. So the whole thing is, when we talk about these things, it's not about complaining or like. There's a reason people talk about things, is because we're trying to get somewhere after the talk. Like if it's just about talking about it, then that's a waste of breath for everyone.
Progress?
Go ahead.
Progress?
No, conversations bring progress. That's how apartheid was able to end. It actually happens. It's like skill versus just pure willingness to do something because it actually has an effect. There's no way that those things do not affect our larger scale or global scale of realization to our natural environment. So the Amazon rainforest is, if a lot of workers are just doing their job, this is reminiscent of what we saw in the Holocaust as well, is like, I'm just doing my job, I'm just following orders, I'd rather just not be bothered. But the whole thing is, when it comes down to it, What actually happens in our natural environment is going to bother all of us. And the difference between those who care and those who are cognizant is there is no difference. Once you're cognizant, do you then care? But it seems like there's another part where you, once you're cognizant, you want to not be bothered and push that away, which brings us to how do we mend that kind of disconnect, that you don't necessarily have to be connected in order to do well, but
true,
but for you to continuously do something to address the solution, which gets rid of the issue, there has to be something for you there, or otherwise don't be a part of it at all. So like, how do you, so when the caller made the connection to the meat industry and agribusiness being the reason, well, that was actually used as an excuse. Like, what if some things that are used, what if some systems like agribusiness being used to clear forests is really just the age-old front for some idea that came up in Disney movies where the forest is being is lived in by, you know, magical fairies and animals alike, or not even that. Let's get to the Jungle Book, okay? So, like, people live there and animals live there, and all of a sudden their habitat's being disturbed and they're not able to fight back against this huge steel lawnmower that's tearing down trees, things they never even thought that could happen. But now we're like, okay, yeah, that's happening. And when we hear their reasoning, aka the president of Brazil says, well, this is a natural thing we do to clear land so we can make business, and it just got out of hand. Well, what if the actual, what seems to be the actual goal is to clear the forest and not care, not, and don't, like, oh, we'll just plant something just to plant something, or we'll just grow something just to grow something, but really we just want to destroy things and like to see you guys scurry, because some people just enjoy lighting cats on fire, and that's something that's, we all want to think is disturbing, but for a lot of people it doesn't budge a nudge in their heart or brain. So when it comes to having conversations like that, and more than conversations, there's action that has to happen. The proposed action was to don't invest. But if you can't, if you're investing in it, and you,
no.
If you, well, when you,
I'm not gonna, I'll go right now down there
to help
and stop those fires.
So when it comes down to taking the action and being, like putting out a fire, doing the heart, yeah.
Does it matter?
Well, the whole point is, if you want to get there, you can get there. The whole point is, when it, well, does it, or maybe it's just to see how, what does it take for us to be heroic? And then when something exciting isn't happening, can, do you still have that, you still have that hero in you, but how it expresses itself is different.
You tell the other guy that you work at the Safeway with that, you know, we are in a union and we have collective bargaining rights. We can stand up for ourselves. We don't have to push those damn carts. Well, I mean, somebody, I guess, has to do it, but it doesn't have to be every half an hour.
Well, here, the thing is, it's a mechanical process that the business itself is necessary for these carts to be available for everyone. And if it's scattered everywhere, the general conclusion is that everyone isn't going to go chase down these carts that are scattered everywhere, that they want it all in one place. That's what makes shopping easier, which makes buying easier.
There's a whole cottage industry of people who pick up these shopping carts.
Well, the whole thing is, like, once we become the whole labor history of working 18 hours, doing something that is repetitive, being the idea of a cog in the wheel type of idea, is that you aren't doing anything special. You're doing something that's necessary, right? And so then what comes in between that and gets people fired up in those positions is that a machine can be made tomorrow that will take their job. So it's not that your jobs are being taken. There was a movement, and which is always happening, of makers and of creatives, and we're in a time and space where all this is available to us to do that, but to make our own and to establish an income from it. The whole thing that I'm finding quite miraculous is that even when this stuff is available, so is it access that we're fighting for? Is it
prison pipeline?
Is it fortitude that we're fighting for? Or are we not noticing that there is a stratification amongst ourselves where we can't bring together a collective goal at hand that kind of calls for everyone to do their own part. So, like, you going down there...
common cause.
Well, the cause is already happening. Like, the fires are occurring. If there's no rainforest, our oxygen levels deplete. The atmosphere changes. When people have a bunch of asthma in the next county over, we're like, well, how'd that happen? Is it natural? It's not natural, but it's a natural effect of what occurs when we don't address these things. But every one of you out there has a special place on this planet and in the labor force. This is the way we have been expressing it. Is it time for a new form? It's definitely time for a new way. Thank you for listening to Labor Radio, and it's 6:30 approaching on September 2nd. Have a great Labor Day, and keep on keeping on.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
This is Prison Pipeline.